two young fathers are shot to death outside an iconic Utah restaurant.
I said, your dad has been hurt really bad.
The grief was disorienting for those left behind, until one choice changed everything.
I just remember writing this letter, and it wasn't me writing it.
Can a personal decision shape generations?
We're all falling for this guy's trick.
I'm Amy Donaldson. Season 2 of The Letter, Ripple Effect, is available now. Follow us at theletterpodcast.com or wherever you get your podcasts.
Why, hello there. It's your old pal, Sarah Silverman, and I'm back with a brand new season of the Sarah Silverman Podcast. On my podcast, I am talking about everything. Politics? Yeah, we get into it. Favorite sandwich shop in L.A.? I know a few spots, and I'm going to tell you about them. I'm also going to be talking to you. I will be reacting and responding to listener voicemails in real time. Let me tell you, things can get weird, and I love every second of it. Weird is my comfort zone. The newest season of the Sarah Silverman Podcast is out now wherever you get your podcasts.
Lemonada.
Hey friends, it's June 2nd, 2023. Welcome to The Interesting, where we break down the viral and very interesting news you may have missed. I'm Bea Spear, and today, we're going to step away from the news for the week and spotlight four nonprofit organizations doing amazing things. Like Illuminative, a woman-led group that's challenging the narrative around Native peoples. And Rainbow Families, which supports LGBTQ plus families, parents, and those hoping to have kids one day. Plus, State Rep Zoe Zephyr of Montana is here with her fiancé, activist Aaron Reed. We'll talk about how it felt to get barred from speaking on the chamber floor, their recent engagement, and what people can do today to protect queer joy. All that and more on today's Be Interesting from Lemonada Media. Let's be smart together. Okay, like I said at the top, we're going to be stepping away from the headlines this week to do something a little different, but I think it's going to be good for our souls. I want to talk about a few of my favorite organizations that are doing just incredible work right now. And it was hard to pick just four, but I chose these four because these are folks that I personally work with. I know them. I know their leadership. And with the exception of the Knapp Ministry, who we'll talk about later, that's a group that I'm just like obsessed with and been a longtime follower of. These are the people that I love and interact with the most in my daily life, and I want you to get to know them too. Let's start with Abortion Access Front, or Abortion AF, if you'd prefer. And get this, they make the abortion fight kind of fun and kind of funny. Comedian Liz Winstead started this organization in 2015. If you don't know the name, you definitely know her work. First, she was on our show back in January, so if you missed that episode, go and search for it and listen. She helped create The Daily Show, where she served as one of the original writers and correspondents. Just like The Daily Show, Abortion AF uses humor to open people's eyes and shine a light on all the bullshit we're hearing these days. Liz says what this movement needs is a jolt of fun and proactive messaging to, quote, expose weird-ass, self-appointed vaginal crossing guards. I just love her for that, and I could not have said that better myself. Liz teams up with other comedians like Sarah Silverman, Margaret Cho, and Helen Hong, as well as musicians and actors, to create content that exposes the pro-lifers, politicians, and fake clinics hurting Americans' right to reproductive health. And she equally supports small clinics and everyday activists fighting for the right to choose. Like one of their latest campaigns, Send in the Gowns, where people across the country called politicians to make OBGYN appointments in order to point out the hilarity of politicians trying to play doctor. Some people even showed up at their state house offices wearing hospital gowns, demanding vaginal care. Abortion AF also tours across America. Their live performances harken back to the USO days when performers would visit military bases to boost morale for soldiers. But this time, celebrities perform for abortion providers and their communities. And I'm just saying, if you guys ever need someone to like sing show tunes or tap dance, but like make it OBGYN themed, I can do that. Sign me up for that. Celebrities and other volunteers then spend time helping the clinics by planting trees, painting murals, and acting as clinic escorts. Liz says it's their mission to get people involved, put bullshit on blast, and reframe abortion into its proper place, a dignified moral choice. If you want to kick ass, take names, and expose sexist shitheads, their words, not mine, head to aafront.org. Now, I believe that everyone should have the right to choose whether or not they'd like to start a family, no matter what they look like, where they live, or who they love. And that's why one of my favorite other organizations is Rainbow Families. This volunteer-led nonprofit offers education and support to LGBTQ+ families, parents, and those even just thinking about having children. Sadly, lots of queer people have a hard time becoming a parent. For a bunch of reasons. Even though the Supreme Court legalized gay marriage in 2015, those changes did not extend to other rights, like adoption and surrogacy. Roadblocks like social stigma, discriminatory adoption laws, and legal concerns can make an already difficult decision even harder. And that's where Rainbow Families comes in. The organization reaches an average of 10,000 people each month through educational classes, support groups, and live gatherings. It was born out of dozens of movements that came before it, like the Gay Fathers Coalition of the 1970s, the Maybe Baby classes of the 1980s, and the Family Equality Council of the early aughts. The Maybe Baby groups are still going strong. The course is designed for prospective parents and covers topics like infant adoption, the foster care system, and the joys and challenges of being queer parents. In addition to the Maybe Baby classes, pen pal clubs, and play groups, the nonprofit holds an annual in-person conference that includes workshops, a kids camp, and a vendor fair. They just celebrated their 20th anniversary at their live event in Maryland last month. I am so close to this organization, in fact, that I call their executive director, Darren, Dad, because he really is just like a dad to all of us. If you are a queer person interested in starting a family or learning more about what the process looks like, you can find them at rainbowfamilies.org. Let's now turn to an organization trying to change the narrative around another disenfranchised group. Did you know that 78% of Americans know little to nothing about Native peoples? That's more than 3 in 4 Americans. This level of invisibility fuels toxic misconceptions and perpetuates stereotypes, inequity, and injustice. Illuminative is trying to change that. Their mission is to build power for Native peoples by amplifying contemporary voices, re-educating Americans, and mobilizing public support for key Native issues. The organization was founded in 2018 after the First Nations Development Institute sponsored the largest public opinion research project ever compiled about Native peoples. That's where the 78% stat came from. The data also found that pop culture, media, and public education drives and perpetuates negative stereotypes. 5 years later, Illuminative has already done so much to change the narrative. They've teamed up with Netflix to fast-track TV shows and films created by Indigenous producers. They've created lesson plans that communities can use to advocate for and celebrate Indigenous Peoples Day. And they're putting pressure on sports leagues and schools to stop using Native mascots. And if you're a fan of true crime, check out their podcast, American Genocide, which tells the painful story of Catholic Indian boarding schools through the eyes of a Native investigator and activist in South Dakota. We covered American Genocide on TikTok last month. And as we keep eyes on the Supreme Court waiting on the opinion that could end the Indian Child Welfare Act, I'll be following Illuminative for guidance on how to best support Native people and their stories. Check out all of their amazing work for yourself at illuminative.org. Activism can be rejuvenating, but it can also be exhausting, especially if you personally belong to a marginalized group. It can be easy to get burnt out, and I even feel it at times. Trisha Hersey feels it too. She's a Black artist and theologian known for her New York Times bestseller, Rest is Resistance, a manifesto. Trisha started an organization called the Knapp Ministry in 2016. It grew out of an art performance where she explored reparations, resistance, Black liberation theology, and the spiritual practice of rest. That performance led her to want to create more sacred spaces where people can rest and rejuvenate. She believes that daydreaming is part of the resistance, that sleep can interrupt brutal power structures, and that collective napping can turn into collective action. At the Knapp Ministry, she organizes retreats, writing workshops, lectures, and art installations that center around rest work. Her book helps explain the work. It's a call to action, she says, for those who are sleep deprived, searching for justice, and longing to be liberated from the oppressive grip of grind culture. As a Black woman, Tricia wants to push back on a legacy of exhaustion that her ancestors endured, and teach other people, especially people of color, to do the same. While many of us recently started using terms like quiet quitting, burnout, and self-care, Tricia has spent years working in this space. Her online platform is growing, and she gives talks across the country to people looking to get off the hamster wheel of capitalism and productivity. You can learn more about the Knapp Ministry at thenappministry.com. And if you're ever in Atlanta, check out their new event space, dubbed the Rest Temple. Tricia will be hosting collective napping, daydreaming, and spiritual coaching sessions. Sign me up. Okay, now that we're all in a restful headspace and successfully escaped the headlines, get ready for one of the most joyous conversations of your life. We have on the show today Montana's first transgender legislator, Representative Zoe Zephyr. I can hear the cheers from here. Everybody loves Zoe, right? Zoe made national headlines this year after being silenced by the State House. And yes, we're going to talk about that. But I also wanted to talk about all the other facets of Zoe's life, including her recent engagement. Love is certainly in the air for this episode because Zoe will be joined by her fiancé, activist and writer Aaron Reed. I mean, these two people on their own are absolute powerhouses, but together, I was just completely overcome by joy and optimism. Stick around. We'll be right back with Zoe and Aaron after this break.
Hi there, it's Julia Louis-Dreyfus. You may know me from my podcast called Wiser Than Me, where I talk to older women and get their wisdom from the front lines of life. After season one aired, I was amazed by how many people told me our show made them look forward to getting older, which is why I'm here to talk about season two of the show. Sally Field, Billie Jean King, Beverly Johnson, Ina Garten, Bonnie Raitt, just to name a few. And of course, my 90-year-old mom, Judy. All hail old women. Wiser Than Me Season 2 is out now from Lemonada Media.
Hi, I'm June Diane Raphael.
And I'm Jessica St. Clair.
And we would like to invite you on a hilarious and heartfelt journey each week on The Deep Dive. From navigating the chaos of motherhood and family to exploring the depths of grief and loss, we are just two best friends who process life together and with you guys. Discover our secrets to finding joy amidst the madness and get ready for unfiltered conversations about life, love, and everything in between. And nails. We talk a lot about nails. Now, community is everything to us at The Deep Dive. We believe in the power of connection and the strength that comes from supporting one another, and we would love to have you with us. So be sure to join us every Wednesday on The Deep Dive from Lemonada Media, wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, friends. We know that trans rights are under attack across the country. The barrage of hateful acts can be overwhelming. I know. I feel it, too. But trans people are fighting back, as they always have, and they're bringing their love to the world every day. Today, I want to highlight two amazing people who are among the fiercest defenders of trans rights. That's Rep. Zoe Zephyr of Montana and her fiancé, Aaron Reed. Zoe is Montana's Democratic state representative for the 100th District, which includes the city of Missoula. And she's the state's first transgender lawmaker. You may remember her name from earlier this year, when Zoe was barred from the Republican-controlled House for the remainder of the 2023 session after she spoke out against a Republican bill banning gender-affirming care. Aaron is a trans activist and writer who covered Zoe's story along with other vital reporting on anti-trans legislation around the country. And we're definitely going to dig into those issues, but we'll also cover their hobbies outside of work, what TV shows they binge, and how they'd frame the political moment we're in. Oh, and we're also going to talk about their recent engagement and what queer love means to them. I am personally really excited to have both of them on the show, and I think you will get a lot from this conversation. And with that, let's bring on Zoe and Aaron. first question, how are you?
I'm feeling great. I feel busy, super busy, but I feel light in the work. I feel like we're doing what we should be doing right now.
I concur. It feels like the work never stops. That's for sure. It feels like every single time I think there's going to be a pause in legislation or news or cultural environments that are going on, we enter into a new phase. And we're going into Pride. So, like, that's a good thing.
I know. Are you guys big Pride Month folks? Because I sometimes get a little scared around Pride time. I have like a lot of insecurity. Do you feel really confident always with Pride?
I love Pride. I think for me, the way in which I get refilled and like the way in which I get rejuvenated is being around other queer people, partaking in queer joy. And so, you know, like the work gets hard and there's a lot of reporting on really bad legislation all the time. But it's whenever I can then go and see all of the people that are like listening in on this and that are fighting and that are also enjoying themselves and doing amazing things in and of themselves that I just sort of get refueled. And so Pride is like the ultimate culmination of that. That's where like I get all of that energy.
When I gave a speech last year at my hometown, Missoula Pride, I said Pride is two things. Pride is sanctuary and Pride is protest. And to me, as we see the escalating attacks, it becomes more and more important to recognize both aspects of those things. So do I care a ton about a corporate float or sponsors or et cetera? Not really. But what I care about is that the community comes together and both shelters everyone from some of the attacks that we're seeing, provides that sanctuary. And also people leave Pride ready to go on and face the attacks that our community is under and do something about it. And that, to me, Pride will always have a place.
See, this is why I love you gals, because you guys can be on the front line and I am literally such a coward. I'm under my desk. Like, and we got to give it up for the shy gays too during Pride. If Pride is something that you feel anxious or nervous about, you know, participate in the way that makes you feel most comfortable. Because after all, it is a celebration about you, about your queerness and whatever way that manifests for you in your life. And before we get more into all of these issues that are facing trans folks, y'all got engaged recently. There it is. There's the ring for people who are listening. Tell me, Zoe, you proposed at Queer Prom, an event in Missoula back in May. Can you paint the scene of how the proposal went down and why it was important to do it at Queer Prom?
Yeah. You know, Aaron and I had talked that a proposal was coming. Mm-hmm. The plan was later this summer. And then the ring actually showed up 2 days before the legislature concluded.
Wow.
In Montana. And I remember, you know, Aaron and I both feeling in the midst of all of that, feeling a desire to be close to one another through what was a difficult time. And when the ring came in, I felt like, okay, I don't think I'm going to make it to July. What's coming up? And someone reached out and was like, will you speak at Queer Prom? And I went, yes. And do you want to help me do a thing? And one of the organizers of Queer Prom said, oh my gosh, absolutely. And so once the legislature ended, Erin flew out along with her son to be in Montana with me. And when prom came up, it felt like the perfect time to be surrounded by, again, that queer joy. And also to really plant the flag of queer joy and say, listen, there are these harmful bills coming. There are attacks on our communities, but you cannot take queer love. You cannot take queer joy away. And that is something I feel deep in my heart and I feel blessed to share in that.
Were you surprised, Aaron?
It was a big surprise and it was a wonderful surprise. I said, I think the first thing that I said to her was, you tricked me. I was just like, kissed her and hugged her and told her that she tricked me. And then I said, told her that I loved her and obviously yes, and all the fun things. It was a very joyful moment. And I'm really glad that like we got to share it with a lot of people who, you know, have had a hard year in Montana. Montana's had a rough year. And to be able to like share a lot of joy with everybody was, I think, just what we needed.
I agree. After the prom, Zoe, I think it was you that said it was vital to uplift and cherish queer joy. What does that mean to you?
Queer joy, queer love, queer community is in my heart the reason we're going to win these fights in the end, because we know what we are centering. We know what our lives are about. And in the face of all of those attacks, if we hold on to that, both at the personal level and the interpersonal level, that will be what gets us through the storm. And as we grow to be, as people recognize us as part of their communities and see and share in that love and joy, the appetite for this kind of hateful legislation has to diminish.
Mm-hmm. You know, so often when we're talking about the hateful legislation, there's this term that seems to have been coined this year, which is parental rights. And those rights apparently only belong to cis, heterosexual, conservative parents often. But in fact, you, Erin, has a child. And Zoe, you're about to become a stepmother. How does that feel? Have you guys talked about what parental rights will mean to you?
So it's kind of hilarious because my son is 7 years old and, you know, he was really excited whenever he saw that we were getting engaged. And, you know, we had talked about the potential of that in the future. And he, you know, he kind of understands the idea that like stepmom is a thing, but here's what he doesn't understand. He doesn't understand that it's like when you get married, she becomes stepmom. So he's already calling her now. Like, yeah, she's already stepmom now. And like, he says it, it's wonderful. It's so innocent and gorgeous. And it's great to see her. She is so amazing with him. You know, I think that being trans and having a kid and being able to be his mom, and that's the way that he relates to me and interacts with me and has used that word for me for like 4 years now. Mm-hmm. It's been a very loving experience for me. It's been a wonderful experience for me. There is no person on this earth that has been a more fierce defender of mine than my 7-year-old kid. Yeah. He is there for me 24/7. He saw Zoe in Montana doing her thing and he was cheering her on. It was really, really wonderful. I took a picture of him watching her give her a speech and like sent it to her afterwards. And you could see him just lit up.
How does it feel for you to be walking into a family right now? Like all of a sudden you're going to have a 7-year-old child, Zoe. There's a lot of women right now listening who are like, oh my gosh, I remember when I, you know, got into a blended family and probably have a lot of tips for you. Is there anything you've done to prepare for motherhood?
When Erin and I first were chatting and we're getting serious about our relationship, I told her that I wanted a love that felt like home. And when I visited in December of last year, which was the first time I got to meet Andy, I was only supposed to be here for like 3 days and I was only going to get one night with Erin. And on the night before I was supposed to leave, we were hanging out with Andy and he goes, I don't want Zoe to go. And I went downstairs and I changed my ticket to be 2 weeks later. And I spent the next 2 weeks with them and I left knowing that this is where I wanted to be, that this is a family that I felt welcomed into and blessed to be a part of someday.
And we've been great to have her and she's been an enormous help and a wonderful person. And it's so nice to have another person in the house. And he loves her and she loves him.
You've been single momming for a while. This must be quite the relief. Somebody else can help.
it's hard to do the work that I do, to do any work really. And I mean, like, I think that there are a lot of single moms out there that would probably understand the idea of, you know, being the sole provider while also building a career and in my case, working on like activism and stuff like that. Like I've had to balance a lot and she understands, you know, she knows what that life is like, but it's also really nice to see, you know, I told her that what was key is like, I fell in love with her and like, I knew that I was in love with her, but I told her that like, you know, my son has to as well. And it's really important that like our relationship, that my son is like, is in this. And he, I mean, he is just, he sees her as just the light of the world. It's great. I love it.
Yeah. It's brush your teeth when Erin says it, it's no. But when Zoe says it, it's yay.
So, oh my gosh.
Enjoying that while it lasts.
Yes.
Yeah.
People love to pretend that there are simple formulas for living your best life now. Eat this and you won't get sick. manifest it, and everything will work out. But there are some things you can choose and some things you can't. And it's okay that life isn't always getting better. I'm Kate Bowler, and on Everything Happens, I speak with kind, smart, funny people about life as it really is. Beautiful, terrible, and everything in between. Let's be human together. Everything Happens is available wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome to The Dough, where cash is queen and we hardly know her, but we're still here figuring her out together because, y'all, season two is here. Hosted every week by me, ex-Maya. Remember me? I'm going to be talking to all types of people about their relationship to money. I'm talking to reality stars, entrepreneurs, financial experts, and even some of my own friends. Basically, anyone who will get real with me about their dollars, how they make money, how they spend it, and how they save it, because I'm trying to retire early, people. Season two of The Dough is out now, wherever you get your podcasts.
The work that the two of you do is so incredibly emotionally laborious, not to mention the education that you've had to give yourselves on legislature, lawmaking, constitutional law, all the different things. And it feels like this came on so quickly, this like heavy attack on trans people and on the silencing of trans people. Erin, how did you prepare to begin this work on TikTok? And just to give folks a little background, if you're not aware, Erin is Erin in the Morn, and basically is the go-to source for all things happening for trans people as far as like laws across the nation, and reports sometimes 3 and 4 times a day on different things that are happening. How did you prepare yourself? When did you feel called to be that person?
4 years ago, I made a map of healthcare clinics for trans people, and it was because even living in like a very liberal state of Maryland, I would have to drive a 6-hour round trip into Pennsylvania to get my medical care, to get my gender affirming care. Mm. And I'd heard that there were these things called informed consent clinics that I could go and get care easily at. Mm. The thing is that all the information about these clinics were disjointed all over the internet. And so I gathered them all together, put them in one map, like went to all the Planned Parenthoods and mapped out where you could get your care, released it to the general public, and it ended up getting, you know, viewed like 5 million times. Now, what happened as a result of that was over time, I started getting emails, you know, DMs about laws that threaten that care. And I learned how to effectively just read these laws, work with activists on the ground, got to know the organizations, and started reporting on the legislation. Originally, this was all done on Twitter, and I did it on Twitter for a long time, but that wasn't like I wasn't reaching all of the audiences that I needed to reach. Mm-hmm. So whenever Elon Musk had stated that he was going to buy Twitter, I knew that that was going to be potentially like a danger zone. And so I had to change my platform. I wanted to learn how to use new platforms. And so I got some lights. I put like some green and some multicolored background lights and started posting on TikTok. And it took off because I think I was reaching an audience. And I am reaching an audience that isn't as used to getting all this information.
Yeah, for me, it was truly like rendered me speechless when I started watching your content because I saw you a couple times and I was like, oh, that's interesting. Maybe like once a week she'll have a little update. And it's like, oh no, this is for trans folks making up such a small percentage of the overall population. The amount of legislation that is coming at them, it far outsizes any other population. I mean, it's truly next level obsessive, I would call it. Zoe, when did you decide to run for elected office? Did it have to do with these attacks on trans folks, or was it for another reason?
Yeah, so I had been doing activism behind the scenes in Montana in a variety of capacities, from helping people file anti-discrimination claims to helping draft policy for the city of Missoula, where I'm from, to doing de-escalation work at my tracking armed counter-protesters at the George Floyd protest to make sure that they would leave protesters alone. Mm-hmm. And that kind of work. And then from that work, I got invited to testify at the legislature and meet with the governor's office on the anti-trans bills in 2021, including the sports ban. I was a high-level athlete prior to my transition and was able to come in there and speak about the importance of sports, what it means, etc. And I watched then both in those hearings, feeling like I was speaking to an audience who did not want to hear, and then watch several pieces of legislation pass by one vote.
Mm.
And I remember thinking to myself, if we're going to change hearts and minds, we need to be in that room. Mm. And so I made some post that day that said, we need trans representation in government. I'm going to get in that room. And then I did what any, you know, person who really is serious about this work does, is I had my 100 cups of coffee with politicians, activists, organizers across the state. And I said, is this a room where my voice can do good in? Mm-hmm. And over and over again, I heard, not only is it a room, it's the room you need to be in right now.
And about 2 months into, you won, which was great. You and Montana has a non-binary representative as well, the very first non-binary representative for the state. And now we've got two representatives who don't subscribe to the gender binary in there. Montana has a very short legislative session, and you only meet like every 2 years or something, right?
Yeah, Montana's legislature is unique in that we meet for 90 days.
Wow.
Maximum, 90 working days every 2 years. So we have a 2021 session, 23, 25. And so our sessions tend to run from January 2nd to early May, late April, depending on how many Saturdays we work.
And you were there for about 2 months before you raised your hand. We saw that iconic photo of you with the microphone in the air, and you were protesting some anti-trans legislation that was happening. And this is when the Montana legislature decided that, in fact, they were going to silence and shut down a duly elected representative. Can you talk about that day?
Yeah. So it's important to note that that moment with the microphone raised above my head was already partway through the silencing. So I spoke out against the governor's amendments to Senate Bill 99, which is a bill that banned gender-affirming care across a spectrum of care. And in his letter, he used sort of cruel language, like he called gender-affirming care, quote, Orwellian newspeak. In his letter where he was removing care from trans people, he called for, you know, compassionate, you know, kindness towards trans people. And in my speech, I said, we don't need your words of kindness. We need the care that lets us live happy, fulfilling lives.
Mm-hmm.
And at the end of that speech, I said that legislators who voted for that legislation would have blood on their hands, speaking about very real harm that had come to my community, including stories of suicide attempts that we had in direct response to the bills that came forward. And after that, the Speaker of the House said, I'm not going to allow you to speak on any legislation going forward. They kept doing that for a handful of days. And that's when people came to the Capitol to rally in support of me and stood watching the events and watching the hearings. They waited for 2 hours until I punched in on a bill. And when I did and wasn't allowed to speak, that's when they stood up peacefully and chanted, let her speak. Mm. And that's when I raised my microphone. After which Republicans banned me from the House floor.
And was your heart just racing out of your chest at that point, or what did it feel like?
It felt like I was doing a moral and just thing. Someone said, you know, people say it took so much courage, it took so much bravery. And to me, it was so clear that what we had been seeing was stripping away the very first principles of our country. Mm-hmm. Like, if we do not have representative democracy, if our citizens do not get their representatives elected to the House to speak on their behalf, mm-hmm. we are on a fast track to authoritarianism. And so in that moment, seeing my community of Montanans stand up in defense of democracy, it was the easiest decision that I made. And I felt a sense of calmness and a sense of rightness in the moment.
I mean, my heart was racing because I was covering it. I was watching the woman that I love, you know, and all of that happening. I was proud of her. Again, like my son, you know, was watching and was like clapping. And
I will say the one moment, you know, where my heart actually began racing. And I think you see from a raised microphone at one point, I outstretch a hand at another point. And in that moment, it was when the riot police batoned someone who was sitting in their chair.
Wow.
That, seeing that happen, it was, it made me worry for the safety of the people who were up there and were being hit by police.
I cried. I knew that I cried watching her, you know, and it was crying just out of just the sheer emotion of it all, because there was so much that I knew she had been going through, our community has been going through, so much that her constituents have been going through, and just to see like that all come to a head, it was a very moving moment. But I was so proud of her. I am so proud of her. I always will be.
What do you think makes people so afraid of gender-affirming care? I mean, this is something that's been going on for so many years, and now we're seeing people, you know, like you said, riot police coming in and literally beating people because they're standing up saying that we need gender-affirming care. We're seeing this foaming at the mouth, like completely out of their minds rage towards trans people who are simply saying, like, this doesn't concern you. I need to be able to get the care that I need to be the person I am. And yet folks are coming so incredibly strongly with such like chaotic hate.
You know, I want to, before I like completely answer that question, I want to point out that like this is part of a thread that has run through American history for a long time. And we've seen this come bubble up to the surface a few times in the past. I mean, even world history, you know, you can go back to 1932, when the very first book burnings were happening in Germany at the Institute of Sexology, which was a institute where the first transgender research was conducted for 30 years. Mm-hmm. And in 1969, Stonewall, you know, the use of drag bans that in three articles of clothing laws to target gay people and LGBT people in their clubs and in their places that they held dear. And, you know, we're seeing the revival of drag bans today, the 80s and the AIDS crisis, where people had to stand in front of churches and yell in the ACT UP era, you know, to say we are worth researching, protecting, defending, caring for. The 90s and the early 2000s, where we saw 32 states pass constitutional amendments against gay marriage. It looked just as bleak then mm-hmm. as it looks now. And yes, it's coming on hard and strong, and trans people are the target, the main target of this particular iteration of this longstanding history of targeting the LGBTQ community and demonizing us and calling us unsafe to be around kids. Mm-hmm. You know, I think that there's been a fear campaign that's been waged by some of the same people that played in some of those previous incidents. And if not, they are the ideological inheritors of that regressive ideology. And to be frank, you know, there's a lot of information out there about the orgs that do this, the Alliance Defending Freedom, the Family Policy Alliance, that are trying to bring about Christian nationalism, like a society where we are living in a theocratic society where the laws of their interpretation of the Christian God are the things that are in effect in America. This is something that's existed for a long time, the use of sort of this sort of religious justification in order to attack the LGBTQ community and to bring American society to what they feel was an idealized past where we were no longer allowed to be out in public.
I say about this, it's important. What they're trying to do when they go in with a bathroom ban, when they go in with a sports ban, is they're trying to get you to accept an asterisk mm-hmm. on trans women's womanhood. Mm-hmm. They're saying, yeah, trans women are women, except for in this instance of sports, except when it comes to bathrooms, except for when they're 16 or 17. Mm-hmm. Maybe if we get you to accept asterisk after asterisk, ultimately, they can get you to remove care and remove trans people entirely. And that's why we guard so carefully against all the attacks across the spectrum. We're talking about the attacks on trans rights and the attacks on LGBTQ people more broadly. But we're also seeing this across marginalized groups. This is one instance in which we have very specific lenses. But these attacks, anytime a marginalized community has risen up and said, hey, actually, you're getting our community killed or hurt with these laws, whether that's abortion rights, whether that's talks about, indigenous rights, whether it's talks about the impact of police brutality on Black communities. There was, around coronavirus, we talked about API and like the struggles that their communities were facing. Every time a group rises up and says, hey, these policies get us hurt, there is a faction that looks to other them and use them as a victimhood to accelerate harmful policies across the gambit.
Yeah, it's always the boogeyman, right? Like when When I talk to my parents' retirement community in Florida about these types of things, there's always this idea of like, yeah, but men are stronger than women. So I think in the sports thing, you know, that's kind of unfair. I'm like, who are you picturing right now? You're picturing a person that doesn't exist. You're not picturing the factual folks within these circumstances. You know, the way that the right and oftentimes paints who a trans athlete is, they're picking like the most possible brute of a man who's going to like trick everybody into being on the girls' swim team. And it's like, that is not what's happening, y'all. And that's what is making people feel like they're protecting women. And for women to be a class of folks who for so long have been begging for protection, oftentimes I feel like they're getting tricked into thinking, well, if I align with men on this particular issue, maybe they'll protect me on a different issue. And the fact is, they will not love you. They will not protect you. This is one leads to the next, to the next, to the next. And they end up taking all of us under.
And it's clear that like they don't truly protect, like care about protecting women. If they did, they would pass so many other sorts of policies. If they cared about women's sports, you know, they would fix the criminal pay gap in women's sports, the criminal amount of investment that we have.
Just give us
in
some
women's
equipment.
Sports at the high school and collegiate level. Exactly. Like if they cared about protecting women, they wouldn't be passing all of these regressive abortion laws, anti-abortion laws. If they cared about protecting kids, they would outlaw child poverty and not gender affirming care.
Right.
We also have, you know, you look at sports, you look at sort of scandals within the U.S. women's gymnastics team and the abuse that they face. You look at also, I just want to call out, it's important to note that the people saying, you know, if you go through, if you're a trans woman and you went through a male puberty or forever to X, Y, or Z to compete in women's sports are the same people banning gender affirming care for people. They're saying we're going to force you to go through that puberty. And then we are going to use the fact that you went through that puberty to deny you access to things like sports. It's also worth noting that there are only 35 trans athletes in the NCAA. They're vastly underrepresented. If trans people were represented proportionally, we would see many, many more. And in instances where trans people have been successful, you think, you mentioned swimming, you think Leah Thomas, her record was broken the next year. But importantly, even if it wasn't, I want to celebrate athletes who work hard. Mm-hmm. Cis athletes, trans athletes. I know, so as someone who was a 5-time state wrestling champion in my youth, like I know what it takes to be successful as an athlete, to work hard. I know the lessons you learn, and I know the hardships and struggles that come with it. I want to celebrate athletes at every stage of their career, whether they're playing in the Pee Wee League or whether they're an NCAA or Olympic athlete.
So there's folks, you know, at home right now who are trying to think of like, how can I support trans people? How can I support trans youth? A lot of my audience isn't even queer. I have like a pretty heavily conservative audience out there. And this is what I call my common sense conservatives, folks who really get it. They can see big picture. They maybe were legacy raised Republican or conservative, but they don't subscribe to all of the ideology. And they're honestly, many of them waking up to the fact that the party that they felt aligned with no longer aligns with who they are as people now, especially after social media, after TikTok, when a lot of folks who just grew up in communities where there wasn't any diversity now live such diverse lives, have had the opportunity to meet folks like yourself and people outside of what they grew up with. And they're wondering, like, what can I do? What are maybe three direct actions that the average person can do to support trans folks and youth?
I think what you have to do is you have to have the courage to stand up in whatever rooms you are in. I'm standing up in the legislature. Aaron is tracking this stuff and posting things on socials. But if you're in your work, if you're in the coffee line, if you're at an awkward dinner conversation, find the spaces that you're in that maybe our community isn't there in that moment. Mm-hmm. And stand up for what's right. It just takes a little bit of courage.
I want to add to, since you're speaking, you know, to a broad audience that might be at various different phases in learning about trans people, queer people, like how they relate to them politically, how they relate to them socially, culturally, is that the biggest step for, I think, everybody, for myself included, like as a trans person, but also for the many allies and to be allies that are out there, is to include more LGBTQ people in your media diet. Mm. And I think that this is your audience is going to have a good leg up on this. But the idea is that a lot of the way in which we conceptualize trans people or queer people comes from the movies and the songs and the readings that we were brought up with as children and as teens and young adults. And if you go back to before 2011 and you watch just about any comedy out there, trans people were either the butt of a joke or the victim or perpetrator of a crime. And so, you know, it's no wonder that whenever we see the political body being discussing trans people right now, that, you know, this goes into trans people are dangerous. And there's so much at work there with our media diet that feeds into that. And thankfully, you know, in recent years, there have been more opportunities to engage in learning more from LGBTQ content creators, actors, writers. The books are out there. The movies are out there. The TV shows are out there. Whether it be Jeopardy and watching Amy Schneider rack up the high score, or whether, you know, you're watching Laverne Cox. I mean, there's, you can listen to Kim Petras, you know, like there are so many content creators, writers, actors, singers that are out there that are doing good work. And as well as getting to know trans people in your daily life. I think that, you know, it's something like 45% of people know a trans person directly, which is a good number. That's about almost half the country knows somebody who's trans. Mm-hmm. But we're everywhere. Like, that number needs to be even higher. Mm-hmm. Get to know somebody as a person, not just for their transness or their queerness, because you'll find that, like, a lot of trans people are also just regular human beings that have their own really fun interests, you know? Zoe is trans, she's in politics, all that stuff, but you know what? She's also really good at a Rubik's Cube.
I saw it, and that's what I love about you gals, and that lesson is your activism as a person can be just as simple as somebody's talking poorly about trans people or saying something awful, and you could go, oh, I'm sick of hearing about that. Why do we even talk like that anymore? You could be just that level. It could be shutting down conversation. You don't have to be on the front lines, the most exactly perfectly politically correct person. It could be as simple as saying, I don't like when you talk like that, or that's not funny to me, or I don't want to hear about it anymore. Shutting down this obsession with trans people in conversation. And like you said, getting to know trans folks, play some video games, watch some anime, like we do all the stuff that you like to do. We play disc golf, we do everything. Thank you both so much for being here. Is there anything we didn't get to talk about that you really wanted folks to know before we leave?
You know, the only thing I think I would touch on is towards the end of your previous question, you talked about it can be as simple as, you know, shutting down a conversation. And I want people to, like, the parallel I draw there is when I stepped into the legislature, what I said my goal was to try to move the needle. And there are 150 different legislators that you're trying to move the needle on. Some of those were in my party, making sure that they understood the issues and could speak eloquently on them, both in committee and on the floor. Other times, you know, I flipped some votes from yes to no. But sometimes it was someone who maybe a session ago stood up and said something really harmful. This time they stayed down.
Mm.
Mm-hmm. And that's one thing that a community did not have to hear, did not have to listen to. Even though they still voted yes, there is some harm reduction there. And the harm comes now to our communities, and so we feel the sense of urgency. I know Aaron and I both feel that daily. Mm-hmm. But also moving the needle takes time.
Mm-hmm.
And so just making sure that you are perpetually working on moving that needle. If you're doing the work in the rooms you're in, and we're doing the work in the rooms are in, that's how ultimately we get bills like these to go away, and we let our community live the happy lives and have that pursuit of happiness we're all chasing.
Erin, final thought?
I just, you know, I'm so glad to be able to be at her side and to do the work that I do with her. I think that we are so good for each other, and I'm really thankful that you've had us on today.
I'm really grateful that you girls were here today, too. I appreciate you both so much. I love watching y'all everywhere. Tell people where they can find you.
ErinInTheMorning.com or at ErinInTheMorn on Twitter and TikTok and Instagram, where I cover all the LGBT legislation that's out there.
And I am at TheSoAndBehold, ZoAndBehold on Twitter, TikTok, Insta, Blue Sky, if you got it.
Thank you all for being here so much. I appreciate you. Keep up the great work. We'll keep following and supporting. You are welcome back here. Anytime you have anything at all you want to say, just jump on in and we'll be here for you. Happy Pride. And we will, I'm sure, see a bunch of Pride content from you as well.
Absolutely. Have a good one.
Take care.
Bye.
It was so amazing to speak with Zoe and Aaron. Their love for each other and the work they do just shines through in such a genuine way. And I am such a sap when it comes to love, so now I have to go cry to my wife about how much I love her. I hope you get to cry to somebody about how much you love them too. This is the way that we go strong into Pride Month. Be sure to tune into next week's episode where we dig into the headlines you may have missed. Leave us a 5-star rating on whatever platform you're listening to. It really helps people find the show. Follow me at Under the Desk News on TikTok, Instagram, and YouTube. And guess what, friends? There is even more Be Interesting with Lemonada Premium. Subscribers get exclusive access to bonus content, like former Miss Tennessee Tally Bevis talking about competing during COVID, her pageant besties, and judging a tablescaping competition at the county fair. Subscribe now in Apple Podcasts. The Interesting is a Lemonada Media original. Our producers are Chrissy Pease, Catherine Barnes, and Martine Macias. Our VP of Weekly Programming is Steve Nelson. Executive producers are Stephanie Whittles-Wax and Jessica Cordova-Kramer. Mix and scoring is by James Sparber. Music by Seth Applebaum. Please help others find the show by rating and reviewing wherever you listen. And follow us across all social platforms at Vita Spear, at Under the Desk News, and at Lemonada Media. If you want more Be Interesting, subscribe to Lemonada Premium only on Apple Podcasts. And follow the show wherever you get your podcasts or listen ad-free on Amazon Music with your Prime membership.
Do you ever get hit with a cringy memory of your 13-year-old self out of nowhere and suddenly you're panic sweating and laughing at the same time? Don't worry. We all get that. It's because being an adolescent is one of the most visceral shared experiences we have as people. And we want to talk about it. Join me, Penn Badgley, and my two friends, Nava and Sophie, on Podcrushed as we interview celebrity guests about the joys and horrors of being a teenager and how those moments made them who they are today. New episodes of Podcrush are out on April 24th, wherever you get your podcasts.
Think about a moment in your life that changed you, where one day you were yourself, and then the next day, poof, you weren't. I'm Stephanie Whittles-Wax, host of the show Last Day, and each week I sit down with a new guest to explore happy, sad stories of transformation. Some last days are hopeful, some are tragic, but on the other side of every last day is a fresh start. Come laugh cry with us. Listen to Last Day wherever you get your podcasts.